Peter, begin by saying that one of the things about the Buddhist tradition, it's said that there are 60,000 what's called Dharma gateways, which means different ways of practicing to wake up and discover freedom on the spiritual path. And that the Buddha went around during his decades of teaching, and depending on who he met, depending on their temperament and so on, he would give a slightly different angle on how to practice and pay attention so as to realize really true nature. But the common denominator for all these different pathways home, as I think of them, the common denominator is that each one of them requires a certain amount of effort, of energy, a certain kind of dedication, like a willingness to try, to put energy in. And in the Buddhist tradition, this is called wise effort. And wise effort is really what gives us momentum and carries us forward on the path. And so it's a very interesting inquiry. You know, what does it really mean if we have some real commitment to waking up and being free? How do we put in a wise effort and not get entangled in what we all know about, which is more striving and the whole trippiness that comes from trying too hard? Okay. So this is what I'd like to explore tonight, and to say that it's a very central feature on the spiritual path, wise effort. If those of you that are familiar with Buddhism know that at least some branches of Buddhism love these lists. They're the four thises and the three thats and the set, you know. And wise effort is on the Eightfold Path. Wise effort is one of the five spiritual faculties, the seven factors of enlightenment, and the ten perfections. So it's, man, it covers all the lists. This is important. And there's this paradox that's really an important one to inquire into, which is that as much as wise effort is described as absolutely essential to unfold and awaken, we learn the deepest teachings about how it's all comes down to letting go, to completely allowing, letting go and letting be. So how do we bring together our understanding that it takes rallying some energy and putting in effort with the deep teachings that for true freedom, a moment of true freedom arises from complete non-doing? Okay, is that a good paradox to explore? Does that make sense? All right, here we go. Well, first, just to say that for everyone I know that is maturing on the path, this inquiry as to how to bring a wise effort, a kind of dedication of the heart to the path, and yet experience a profound kind of letting go, that's like right at the center of the inquiry. What does it really mean to make a wise effort? And one of the understandings that I found really useful is described as kind of a cycle of awakening. And the cycle goes kind of in some basic way like this, that we come to the path with a certain wisdom or intuition that there's a real possibility for freedom inherent in each of us. A certain wisdom that our deep nature is awareness, is love. And it's that intuition and wisdom that creates an aspiration to really fully realize and inhabit that. So the first thing is that there's this wisdom, and then there's out of that this aspiration. Okay, so I wanna live that. And it's that aspiration that then gives rise to effort, to wise effort, to the effort to pay attention. And the more we pay attention, train our awareness, the more deep wisdom emerges, which then makes us even more intentional, which makes us even more dedicated in our effort, which then brings up even more wisdom. So keep cycling. The more you realize, wow, the love and awareness that's here really is available, the more motivated you get to put your efforts in the direction that will allow you to live that fully, more continuously. Does that cycle make sense? Because this is what we're going to kind of be exploring. Now, we get stuck and we get snagged because there's conditioning. Instead of resting in that kind of deep wisdom of, wow, this potential is within me, to really experience a kind of radiance and wisdom and compassion, instead we get hooked in what I call a trance of feeling small and separate and unworthy and like something's wrong. And when we're in that trance, instead of this deep aspiration, what happens is our intention gets very narrow and fixated. When we're feeling unworthy and bad and afraid, what are we really ending up fixing our intention on? It gets fixated in ways that are really more marked by how am I going to get through the day, chronic trying to figure things out, controlling others, manipulating. So when we're in that sense of something's wrong, we get, instead of that deep aspiration to awaken, we get really small and tight. And a lot of it's around survival. One of my favorite survival stories has to do with poodles. This is a story about a poodle, a leopard, and a monkey. A wealthy man went out on a safari in Africa and decided to take his beloved poodle along for company. One day the poodle started chasing some butterflies and found himself totally lost. Wandering around trying to find his way back, the poodle saw a leopard rapidly heading his way. The poodle thought to himself, uh-oh. Luckily, the poodle noticed some bones on the ground close by and immediately turned his back to the approaching cat and started to chew on them. Just as the leopard was about to pounce, the poodle called out, "Boy, that was one delicious leopard, but I'm still hungry. I wonder if there's another around." Upon hearing this, the leopard halted in his attack, mid-stride, a look of abject terror on his face. He crawled off into some nearby trees, thinking, "Whew, that was a close call. That creature nearly got me." Meanwhile, a monkey had been watching this whole scene from high in the nearby tree. The monkey called out to the leopard, promising some valuable information in return for the leopard's protection. The leopard agreed to the deal and, of course, was furious to learn that he had just been made a fool of. The leopard, now with the monkey on his back, took off to find and eat the conniving canine. Once again, the poodle saw the leopard, this time with the monkey in its back, approaching. Poodles are smart, by the way, quickly put together two and two, and while realizing he wouldn't have time to escape, so here's what he did. He sat with his back to his attackers, pretending he hadn't seen them. And just when they were close enough to hear, he exclaimed, "Where is that damn monkey? I sent him off an hour ago to bring me another leopard." So we like winning, we like outdoing, we like being clever, you know. So when we get into a tight, small space, really we end up doing a lot of the striving and proving and trying hard. And a certain amount is necessary for survival. If we can't outwit, if we can't anticipate, if we can't plan, if we can't defend well, we won't survive. So this isn't about putting that aside. But the truth is, we get addicted to all of our strategies for survival. We get addicted to over-planning and over-worrying and over-anticipating and over-rehearsing. Isn't that so? We spend a lot of our life moments that way. And so there's an understanding that while we need to make effort, true wise effort is not caught in that spinning. It's been described, Lily Tomlin says, even if you win the rat race, still you're a rat, you know? You know that one. So if we look closely at what drives our efforts in any moment. What is our effort like when there's fear and anxiety? What's it like? I mean, are we creative in our efforts? If you think of today, where there was anxiety, are your efforts at work or in relationships creative? I mean, can we be wholehearted? Can we bring a wholeheartedness when what we're doing is coming out of anxiety and fear? Can we bring a sensitivity to that? If we're fearful, will our efforts promote peace and harmony? If we're angry, will they promote that? Similarly, when our efforts are come out of craving, when we're wanting things really badly, what kind of effort comes out of that? You can think for yourself when you're really wanting that bowl of ice cream, or when you're really wanting attention or recognition, when you're really wanting something, what are your efforts like then? Again, we see that we get manipulative, we get preoccupied. We lose sight of the big picture when our efforts are coming from some wanting and grasping. It's said in India that when a pickpocket sees a saint, he sees the saint's pockets. So again, we all have wants and fears, and we're all going to act out of them. But if that's the primary energy that's driving our efforts, we lose sight of the big picture. There's a tightness. There's a manipulation. Bottom line, we're constantly trying to control our life versus experience our moments. So then we look at, well, what does it take to arrive at wise effort? And it's interesting to me that whatever our habit is during the day in terms of how we make an effort, if it's primarily fear-driven or grasping, we bring that same habit to meditation practice. And it's really important to begin to look at how do we relate to meditation practice? What kind of an effort are we bringing here when we sit? And for many, if there's a lot of fear in our daily life, and if there's a lot of self-doubt, then the way we approach meditation is some sense of, well, I'm not really cut out for this, or it's going to be too hard, or I can't really do it. So our effort is half-hearted, so we don't really try, or we don't even do it at all. That's fear-based. Or we might find that during the day we do a lot of escaping. We have a lot of ways that we try to get away from our experience. And then when we meditate, we're really doing the same exact thing. We're using meditation to kind of get into a trance, a light kind of trance where it's kind of dull but peaceful, and we're blocking out the world. Again, that's not wise effort. Or we might have in our daily life a lot of fear about doing things wrong, and find that when we're meditating, there's always this monitoring of, I'm not doing this right. And a kind of controlling, try to control our mind and steer it a lot, or be a perpetual coach inside our own minds. Or maybe in our daily life we're always chasing after highs. You know, we've got one of those dopamine cocktails where we're always trying to get new, stimulating, exciting experiences. And then when we're meditating, we have this idea of something we want to experience. I know for myself, I've described here a number of times of being a kind of striving yogi for many years when I lived in an ashram in a spiritual community. And it was kind of like that. I'd done enough training of my mind that I could get very quiet and have kind of absorption experiences that were really delicious, very still and rapturous and peaceful. And so what I'd do is every time I'd sit down, that's what I'd be going for. And I'd try real hard to get my mind in a certain way and my body a certain way so I could really feel the dazzle-razzle of samadhi. And when it came, I was feeling really good about myself as a yogi. And when I couldn't, I was feeling really bad. And of course, it was up and down and up and down. And I remember when I went to visit some spiritual teachers to see how I could really keep improving on the path, you know, the striving. the response over and over, whoever I talked to, was just relax. I mean, they saw pretty clearly. And I would just, and then I'd say to myself, just relax. That's the thing I'm going to do now, you know, and that became my next project, you know. I always like this from Garrison Keillor. Some of you might remember. My ancestors were Puritans from England. They arrived here in 1648 in the hope of finding greater restrictions than were permissible under English law at that time. One athlete described his effort this way. I used to overtrain because doing a lot made me feel like I was achieving something. It seems good to grind out the repetitions, but actually it's just lazy. It's much harder to notice just what my body needs, how I'm breathing, just what's happening right now. But that's how my practice changed, and I never get injured anymore. So this is the inquiry. How do we approach meditation practice ourselves? And the given is our patterns during the day are just going to be what our patterns are when we're approaching spiritual life. So let's just reflect on this for a moment together. Let me invite you to do a check-in. And even if you're brand new, you can check in on how you approach anything you really value. It might be exercise or learning something or doing something creative, piano, art. How do you approach these things? And for those of you that do meditate and sit, you might want to sense, just ask yourself, so what is my relationship with meditation practice? How do I approach it? Is it a feeling like I should, the kind of duty to be a good person? Is there a kind of pushing myself? Am I tentative about it? Joyful? And when you're sitting, what's the quality of effort? Is there a striving going on? Are you judging? Are you wanting to do it right? A sense that it's not right? Or is there an indifference? Like, well, this doesn't really matter that much because I can't really do it anyway very well, or it's too hard. Kind of loose attention. Or is there a love for it? Is there a sense the effort's just to be right here, a valuing of being here? So you can continue to kind of explore that. But let me just say, there's a classic metaphor for wise effort in spiritual practice. The Buddha described a lute, and he said, you know, that sometimes we practice and it's like the strings are too tight, we're too controlling, we're too tense, we're too judging, we're thinking it's wrong or it needs to be better, and there's a tightness around our practice. And at other times, the lute's too loose. It's like, manana, you know, I can't do this anyway, or it doesn't really matter, or I'm more interested in some other things, and the strings are too loose. It's kind of like one of my first yoga teachers said, okay, you strivers, just relax, and you slackers, sit up straighter. You know, it's kind of this balancing of the lute. So the basic teachings on wise effort. Now, what is really wise effort in spiritual practice? The basic teachings are that wise effort is the effort to simply be here, right here. Wise effort is the effort to remember presence. It's a little circular, but that's important. So just kind of try to tune in that our effort is to create a kind of inner environment that allows us to let go completely and not make an effort. just different ways to consider it. In other words, our efforts are setting the stage for profound letting go. And that when we make a wise effort, we really let go into our naturalness. We reconnect with the natural wisdom and compassion so that wise effort connects us, brings us home. And then our actions in the world arise out of that. So this wise effort to let go doesn't mean being passive. It means that we let go into our resourcefulness, our wisdom, our love. And then we live from that place. The challenge is that we continually get hijacked. Our intentions to let go, to be present, and we continually get hijacked into trying to control what's going on. You'll notice if you start paying close attention that as soon as you relax and let go, the mind starts trying to find something to stimulate it or soothe it in the way of thoughts. That's just what we get caught in over and over again. And one person described it really well. It's like we're rearranging the lounge chairs on the deck of the Titanic. We're always trying to kind of manipulate things to feel better, and we can temporarily feel better. But wise effort, we stop the manipulating and open to the fullness of presence right here. There's a litmus test, and we're going to explore some of the different ways of wise effort, but there's a litmus test, which is when we're making a wise effort, is the result a feeling of homecoming, a feeling of more presence, a feeling of more freedom? If our effort's fear-based, all we're going to feel is more fear. If our effort's grasping, we're insatiable. We'll have it for a moment, and then the desire's actually, it's like drinking salt water to quench thirst. Wise effort, there's a homecoming. So let's explore how to cultivate, and I'd like to break it into a few different parts. The first kind of universal dimension of wise effort is the effort to pause and create space rather than tumbling into the future. It's what we do when we come here, and we just create some space to quiet down. Why do we have to make that effort? Because we're so hooked on leaning into the future. Even when we're not really busy, we have an idea of the future that we're on our way to. Have you noticed how many moments we're on our way to what's next? How rare it is to just fully, here, this. Pausing. That's the first wise effort. I read you. According to one Hebrew writer, the Sabbath served to disconnect us from our normal attitude of making, doing, and changing. To experience the world free from the need to interfere with it is a transformative and liberating experience. But it can't be achieved in the midst of a day filled with getting, spending, speeding, and making. So we take one solid period of time, 24 hours, to change our relationship to the world, to refrain from acting upon it, and instead to stand back and celebrate the grandeur and mystery of creation, presence right here. This is the first element of wise effort, that we pause, whether it's a pause in the midst of a busy day, just, okay, here. You know, we might hang up the phone and then just pause before we do the next thing. Or it's in the middle of a sitting and we realize we've been spinning off in thoughts, right? Notice thinking and then just pause. Create a space to arrive here. So this counters the conditioning to trip off into the future. So just take a moment and you might close your eyes and just sense to yourself that this is a moment of the sacred pause, the wise effort towards presence. It's the pause, the effort to not do. And just to notice how it is. The test being, is there more of a sense of presence? Just pausing. When you're ready to open your eyes, and the second element of wise effort in the wisdom traditions, in these traditions that really train us towards presence, is what I sometimes call remindfulness, which is that we make the effort to quiet some so that we can remember to come back. And that means that we make the effort to notice when we're lost in thought. And we might use the breath as an anchor, or the body as an anchor, and we just keep returning here, remindfulness, remembering again. And what happens is we begin to get the knack of recognizing the difference between being in our thoughts, in the trance, and being here. So this is the second training of wise effort, to wake up from thoughts. Not that thoughts are bad. It's just that that's not all there is. And if we're in our ideas about the future and ideas about the past, we can't honestly be here. So we pause and we begin to practice noticing thinking and remembering to come back, remindfulness. It's like saying, yeah, something's right here. A life is right here. Come back. So there's pausing, there's remindfulness coming out of thoughts back into what's right here. The third, noticing what's here and allowing it. That's the third wise effort. What's right here? The question is, what's happening? Can I be with this? Can I say yes? So again, let's just check it out for a moment. Just close your eyes, if you will. And see if you can notice how these are efforts towards non-doing, non-effort. It's really the efforts towards wakeful, relaxed attention. First we pause. You might find your breath, find your kind of home base. Know that you're here. Then our practice is, if the mind drifts, the only effort is one of remembering when we can to come back home, right here. And while we're here, the effort's to notice what's happening and to allow. It's an effort to relax resistance. So that these next few moments, your wise effort just simply to agree or say yes to whatever you notice. Pausing, waking up from thoughts, and the effort to be present with what's right here, remindfulness. And the test of wise effort, does this bringing attention to the present allow you to feel more alive, more free? More real? Is it a homecoming? You can open your eyes as you'd like. So, one of the descriptions I thought was really a really powerful one or useful one of the ups and downs of wise effort is one woman who was really struggling with walking meditation. And if, for those of you who are not familiar, in addition to sitting practice, there's practice in being awake and attentive in all the different activities, and walking is one of the most beautiful trainings, how to step with awareness. But this woman was having difficulty. She was straining and struggling and tensing and not finding it at all pleasant. So she asked if she could skip it and do sitting for the whole day. And the suggestion instead was that to stop sitting and do a whole day of just walking and see if she could find her way to this wise effort we're talking about. So she moaned and said, how about half a day? And there was a negotiation, all right, half day. So here's, she did that for the first half of the day. And I'd like to read you the note she wrote. Long walking meditation, all morning assignment completed. Thank you. Now I can meditate while moving. I thought I might discover why I've been so resistant to it, but no, circumstances taught me something else instead. I chose to walk in the annex walking room because it is small, beautiful, and usually quiet. Today, however, it was noisy as hell. There was some guy in there walking as a little engine that could, wearing noisy little boots. Well, thought I, surely he'll be gone when the walking period ends. No such luck. This madman pounded his way through an hour and one half, except when he paused to drink or remove a noisy layer of clothing. I tried metta, that's a loving kindness practice. Surely he must have a lot of pain to be so driven. Then I realized that I wanted to kill the SOB. I stood there noting hate, hate. Later, I stood in the middle of the room and wept. Tears, tears. Then I got to the point that I realized that whatever problem he had was his and not mine. After that, I got quiet and he was just sound. And so I walked and breathed, and he paced and pounded, and pretty soon it was all the same to me. His noise, my breath, the movement of my body. After an hour and a half, he left, and it was incredibly quiet, which was different, but not as much better as I'd expected. Mostly just different. Thank you. So I share that with you because really when you think of wise effort, unwise effort is when we're trying to get things to be a certain way, when there's a controlling, whether it's of our meditation or our child or our parent or whatever it is. We make those efforts in our day and there's a certain amount we have to do. But the liberating understandings come when we give up that kind of controlling, and the only effort is to pause and come back here and notice what's happening here. Noise, breathing, feelings, sensations. That's where the genuine insights, the genuine heart openings, all come from that kind of liberating presence, not from controlling. So what I've mentioned is our challenge, whether it's in daily life, the kind of efforts we make, you know, at work or in relationships with each other, or whether it's in the sitting practice, is that when we get caught in trance, when we get caught in fear and wanting, we're not motivated to pause. We're not motivated to pay attention to what's going on. Have you noticed when you're in a state, like during the day, the last thing you want to do is pause and sense what's happening and be with it. You want to go take care of things. In fact, when we're really not, when we're in that trance of I'm not okay or something's wrong with the world, we don't want to stop and be present. We want to fix things or escape from the experience. Isn't that true? That's our conditioning. So the challenge is that the very conditioning to leave, to get away, to fix, to control, keeps us from genuine wise effort, which is to pause and be here. So I'll read you another story. This is a story that was shared by Araya Mountain Dreamer. Some of you know her, wonderful poet and teacher. At the end of a very long day, a small thin woman in an oversized parka introduced herself as Isabel. This is a day on meditation. "Can I do this meditation on my own?" she asked. "Yes," I said, "I'm sure you can, although many people find it easier to establish a meditation practice with the help of a group. It's just hard to keep up the discipline on your own." "But what will it give me? What will I get if I do it every day?" Her tone took on a whining quality, and I felt my irritation rise as she continued. "How fast will it work? Will I feel difference after a week? How will I know it's working?" This is exactly the kind of thing I detested, the quest for the quick fix, the desire for guaranteed outcomes, the simple answer. "Do this and you will get that." My sons were waiting for me, and I wanted to go home. I took a deep breath, looked directly at Isabel, and set my knapsack down on the floor. I tried to slow down my words, thinking that maybe if I spoke slower, I would feel more patient. "Well," I said, "meditation is more a process than a goal-oriented activity. It can help you become more aware of what's going on within and around you, and this can help reduce stress. My best advice is to try it and just be patient with yourself." I picked up my bag and started to button my coat. I really did have to leave, and I wanted to get out while I was feeling virtuous for not snapping her head off. But as I started to move away, Isabel suddenly reached out and grabbed my arm with surprising strength. "But what I want to know," she said, her voice rising in a crescendo that bordered on real panic, "is will it help me find God? If I meditate, will I have an experience of something or someone out there listening, something really with me?" A wave of desperation swept out from her through me, and I was surprised to find my eyes started filling with tears. This woman wasn't looking for an easy answer or a guaranteed formula because she was lazy. She didn't want a simple plan because she was unwilling or unable to think critically about what would work. She wanted something she knew would work and work quickly because she was hanging on by her fingernails. She wanted something that would work in a week because she was afraid that she simply wasn't going to make it through months or years. I put my hand gently over Isabel's where it gripped my arm. "It's okay, Isabel. We all feel desperate at times," I said. "Nobody does it by themselves. We all need help." Her hand relaxed a little beneath mine and she started to cry. We talked for a while longer. "There is no them. There's only us. When I left, I did not leave one of them. I said goodbye to one of us, a human being doing the best she can, searching for the home for which all our hearts long." So when we're caught, there's a grasping. There's a wanting. There's the wanting something right now. And for Araya Mountain Dancer, when she was caught, there was a, "I don't want to deal with this," you know, kind of like, "get this out of my face." When we're caught, we get small. And there's us and them. And for the woman in this story, there was a sense that she was practicing for some answer out there, somebody out there, something that could save her. We all have that same longing to belong and to feel connected and home in our lives. And when we get caught in trance, we start grasping out there and we start running away from what's here. And it takes patience. And it takes a deep listening and a letting go of judgment to help us find our way back home to that deep intention, that deep aspiration, that really helps us find what we long for in here and right now. There is no answer out there, and it's not down the road. So the wisdom that's in wise effort is that we keep coming right here. We keep pausing and taking our time to gentle ourselves back here, because that's the only place that we can find out that there is that connection, that we belong, that everything we long for, the wisdom and the sense of inner freedom, is only found right here. Now, because our habit is so much to fixate our attention and to leave, there's some ways of remembering that help us to realize it's only right here. And I mentioned a cycle of awakening. And it starts with a certain kind of wisdom that sees reality right here and kind of intuits the awareness and love that's possible. And so there's some reflections that help us to remember that so we get back in touch. And one of the reflections that helps us, and these are the reflections that fuel wise effort, is that everything is changing and we don't have that long. It's like these lives are changing and like waves, they appear and dissolve, and we don't have that long. And if we can remember that it's temporary and precious, that helps us to have the wisdom to say, okay, it's right here. It's not going to be down the road. It's right here. Carlos Castaneda, in one of his books, writes this. He says, when death makes even the slightest gesture, pettiness drops away. Awareness of death transforms one's ordinary time on earth into magical power. So the first wisdom reflection, we don't have that long, that each moment counts. We have just now, and now really matters. And if we're remembering that, like if right now you really let go of an idea of the future, as Rumi said, I'd bow to the one who could just let go of ideas of the future, that a future exists, then we take seriously that right now counts. And our effort becomes wise because we pause and we really inhabit now, right here. Can you sense that right this moment? Just again to pause and sense this changing life. And the truth that we don't have so long. And that this moment matters as much as any moment in the universe. Can we pause and honor it right here? Wise effort is the effort to be here. So this is the first wisdom reflection. It's on impermanence. Anicca is the Pali word. Sounds come and go. Feelings change. Spring comes, spring goes. This life is fleeting and precious. Now matters. The second reflection, wisdom reflection, is the recognition that when we try to hold on, when we don't want it to change and try to hold on and make things the same, or when we don't like what's arising, we try to push it away, there's suffering. It's very logical. If we're at war with how it is, there's suffering. So the second understanding really is that there's a profound freedom in completely opening to how it is. And again, this is an understanding, a wisdom, that then gives us that aspiration to let go and really arrive here. Because in any moment that we're saying, I want it different, there's tension in our being and it creates a separation. We're separate from the moment. We're no longer at home with ourselves. And we can't really be intimate with each other. This is the second reflection. Suffering when we cling, when we try to make it different, when we resist. And just feeling, okay, so let me arrive fully here. Be at home right now. The third reflection, when we look deeply, if we just pay attention right now and let go of our ideas, is that this whole idea of a separate self, this whole preoccupation with I want, I fear, the self-centeredness obscures what's really here, which is simply awareness, tenderness, openness. That there's no actual self or entity we can find. Of course, if we think we can make one up, but if we pay attention to our actual experience, there's a changing flow of phenomena. And if we really open to that, we discover an openness and presence that connects us with all beings and all life. So that wisdom of what's called no self or connectedness gives rise to this aspiration to really live from that love, live from that presence. And again, we deepen our attention rather than chasing after, rather than getting caught more stories about what I need, where I'm going, what others are thinking of me. We sense, okay, there's a story of me, but there's a deeper, richer experience of belonging to this web of life and caring about life. And when do we feel more at home? When we're caught in our daily trance of what I want and what I'm going to do next and how I'm more comfortable? Or when we're feeling a sense of belonging with each other, belonging with nature, reaching out to help another? When do we feel more at home? So that's the third, what's called the third characteristic of reality, which is connectedness or selflessness, which actually inspires us to be more fully here. Aldous Huxley, when he was dying of throat cancer, he was surrounded by a number of his friends and dear ones and a few students, and one person asked him what he had learned in his life. And he couldn't speak, but he could whisper, and what he whispered was, just to be kinder. That when we deepen our attention and realize this connectedness, all that matters is being kinder. And if this moment you said to yourself, okay, so how do I arrive at kindness? The pathway is, again, the simple effort to be here and present with your heart. That's it. There's no other way to kindness. Just be here and be present with your heart. So this is the practice. If you want to really explore wise effort, we come back again and again to remembering what matters. If you can remember what matters, it'll carry you into the present moment. Take a moment again. Just close your eyes if you will. One teacher said, what really matters is remembering what really matters. So just as we do at the beginning of the class, to take some moments to ask yourself right now, underneath the different, we have layered intentions. You know, I want to feel better, I want to get healthy, I want to look good, I want to accomplish. You go under the surface waves into that vast stillness of the sea of being. What is the longing that really suffuses your awareness? What is it that most matters? you could say what your longing is for just these few moments that you're sitting here right now. And just to let that aspiration guide your attention. Right here. This is the essence of wise effort. To remember what matters to us. To completely be right here, awake and engaged. And to let it be, just let it be, as it is. What happens when you completely let be? The poet Mary Oliver puts it this way. She says, to live in this world, you must be able to do three things. To love what is mortal, to hold it against your bones, knowing your own life depends on it, and when the time comes to let it go, to let it go. To live in this world, you must be able to do three things. To love what is mortal. To hold it against your bones, knowing your own life depends on it. And when the time comes to let it go, to let it go. We can do this through our lives and in any given moment. To love what is here, to care about what's right here, these changing moments, to care, to feel it fully, absolutely feel fully, wholeheartedly what's here, and to let it be. Let it unfold, let it flow, let it go. So we'll end just continuing to sit for a few moments quietly. And just to know that this inquiry into wise effort is not at all abstract. Naturally, through our days, we have to make efforts that might feel like they're coming from fear or wanting. But to be able to pause and sense what most matters. And then have our effort be simply presence right here is the gateway to freedom. Everything we long for is right here. Feeling the wish in this moment that we might continue with more and more presence in our lives, more and more care in our hearts, and the wish for all beings everywhere. May all beings be filled with loving presence, held in loving presence, that all beings everywhere might touch a great and natural peace. That all beings everywhere might awaken and be free. Namaste.
The teaching you have received has been freely offered. If you would like to contact the Insight Meditation Community of Washington to make a donation or to learn more about our programs, please visit our website at www.imcw.org.